about. And continuing on the trend of breaking down some more, I guess, complicated academic topics, I wanted to talk about something that I'm really interested in as an academic and just kind of generally interested in, I guess you could say politically, because it is an issue that pops up a lot in a lot of current discussions, especially, you know, anybody that's listened to the episodes that I did on our cyberpunk world, where I talked about how the modern world is basically the cyberpunk dystopia, utopia that has been talked about and written about since, you know, the 50s and 60s. You know, the work of Philip K. Dick and Gibson and different authors have written about for a very long time. That's the issue of inequality. It's very easy to conflate inequality and poverty, where the two are inclusive of one another, but ultimately can be distinct. Poverty is, you know, inequality is necessary to poverty, but poverty is not necessary to inequality. Inequality just describes difference or a gap between two individuals, unequal power, unequal finances, unequal social standing. Inequalities exist all over the place. Whether, you know, a billionaire talking to a millionaire, they are unequal in terms of finances, just like the growing billionaire class is to the poor in the Western world. And today I'm going to talk about one of my favorite books. Ultimately, like, when I was prepping for this show, I went back and I skimmed through the chapters from this book, and it really made me want to read it again, because it's quite short. I'm looking here, and when you get to the the reference section, it's 184 pages, so very short in terms of book length, and the writing is very, very simple. It's not one of those books. It's not like Michel Foucault or Pierre Bourdieu or Karl Marx. It's more of an academic book that's written for an audience, not exactly a layman audience, because you're dealing with some very complicated topics and some philosophical discussions. But I think it's a very readable book, and that is The Killing Fields of Inequality by Goran Therborn. Therborn is an academic currently working in the UK, I believe at Cambridge, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a long time. I really wanted to do my PhD with Goran Therborn, and you'll kind of figure out why very quickly. But I want to break down inequality a little bit more. Basically, the way that Goran Therborn does in Killing Fields of Inequality. And a lot of this is taken from Chapter 4 of Killing Fields of Inequality. Chapter 4, Three Kinds of Inequality and Their Production. So this deals with, as the name implies, the different types of inequality that he conceptualized and the ways in which those inequalities are generated and maintained. So when people think of inequality, they generally think financial, and that's kind of the discussion that is often had. Is talking about financial inequality, the gap between the rich and the poor, the gap between the upper class, the middle class, and the working class. Therborn takes this idea and expands it. The Killing Fields of Inequality is literally about the idea that inequality it causes mortality. The old statistic that 1% drop in employment means 40,000 extra deaths per year, due to various causes, whether they're health related, suicide, crime related. Inequality or unemployment leads to desperation, leads to lack of resources, which leads to death. So we really need to start changing. And when the discussion surrounding colonialism comes up, people immediately jump to the money thing, is that indigenous communities want money. They want to be kind of paid to go away, where that's really not the idea. That's not the inequality we're necessarily looking at. It's part of it, but it's not everything. So Goran Therborn breaks down inequality into three different types. There is vital inequality. This is taken from page 49, referring to socially constructed unequal life chances of human organisms. So mortality rates, life expectancy, health expectancy. You can measure it like child health, birth weight, body growth, malnutrition. So vital inequality talks about differences arising out of inequality, differences physically and in the physical life chances of individuals. So it's long been known that due to inequality, individuals, especially in the United States, have different access to healthcare. So people don't go to the hospital when they need to. They don't have the knowledge of certain diseases. They don't have the ability, you know, when you're sick, they don't have the ability to stay home. So that exacerbates and that makes them sicker. We're seeing that with COVID right now, where working class and poor communities are being hit extremely hard because these people don't have they're not spaced out enough. They don't have the ability to stay home. And they generally, because of access, don't have good health outcomes compared to their richer neighbors. And that leads to higher disease rates, that leads to higher infant mortality, that, you know, malnutrition leads to slowed physical development. So vital inequality is a way to capture this. Next is existential inequality. This is a little bit more philosophical, but I think really the discussions that we're having around colonization, Black Lives Matter, kind of feminism, they're issues that existential inequality comes up with. Again, page 49, the unequal allocation of personhood, examples of autonomy, dignity, degrees of freedom, of rights to respect and self-development. So he pulls out the quote from British common law. Women are persons in matters of pains and penalties, but are not persons in matters of rights and privileges. So existential inequality goes beyond just rights and privileges. It goes to personhood, the treatment of individuals. So existential inequality for indigenous peoples, back in the times of, it's still in the books, but the Indian Act changed the personhood of indigenous peoples, where they had certain rights that were taken away. They were not able to vote. They weren't able to move without from place to place without proper authorization. They were treated as second-class citizens. They were unable to go to certain places. Jim Crow in the United States stopping Black people from going into certain restaurants, eating in certain places, stopping in certain places, going to the bathroom, they having colored and white water fountains, colored and white bathrooms. Existential inequality is this kind of the way that the system has shaken out, that individuals based on characteristics that they cannot control are treated differently and are considered differently from, you know, the general cis white man. So individuals are not given the respect and autonomy. We talk a lot about a paternalistic state, which looks at indigenous peoples and looks at poor people, where it needs to manage them. You know, they don't have the freedom and autonomy that kind of middle class, upper class people would have, because the state is kind of breathing down their neck and threatening to take their children away, threatening to take their housing away. So they are kind of existentially, as a person, are not equal to their neighbors. If you think, you know, you really just need the easy example, it's the different treatment of African American people in the United States and really the entire Western world. We're getting really caught up in what's happening in the States, because it's where a lot of the cases are coming from. But here, even here in Winnipeg, we're having lots of trouble with kind of having to confront the unequal treatment of Black people in this country. So existential inequality are those structural differences which treat people differently based on these characteristics. And then finally, obviously, resource inequality. So again, to quote, providing human actors with unequal resources to act. This is where the most inequality discourse begins, with the arrival of the first paycheck, disregarding the fact that by then many bodies have been buried and many lives have been stunted forever by humiliations and degradations. So this is, you know, talking about the discourse around inequality almost immediately considers money and the financial inequalities, the gap between the rich and poor. But really, the inequalities begin long before that. This is why we're talking about the quote that came out recently, the tweet that was, if all the racists were removed from society, if there was no racists in society, the system would still be stacked, and would still harm the oppressed populations, because the system was built by people who were not them, and it was not built for people like them in mind. And kind of the cards are stacked against them from birth, based on, you know, the other two things, vital and existential inequality. You're born black and poor, you're going to be treated differently walking down the streets, you're going to be treated differently by police officers, you're going to be treated differently by the court system, you're going to be treated differently by healthcare professionals than a white person. And if you're poor, that gets added on top of that, because you're going to have these issues, obviously existential inequality because of being poor, but also vital inequality, because you're going to have stunted growth, you're going to have malnutrition, you're going to have poor health outcomes and higher mortality rates because of this thing you can't control. So really, we're missing the mark when we only talk about money. So really, inequality is much more complicated. You have to think of it from these three dimensions. If you're born there born, you would like them to think of them as from these three dimensions. So vital, existential, and resource. It's not just about the money, it's about everything else that comes with it. The discussions that we had when we were, this was a book that a bunch of us read during kind of the last few years of my undergrad, my honors degree. We had discussions about chapters from this book, and actually this chapter in particular was the one that I chose to present on. And the discussion turned to, if money were equal, if you have two rich people, two people that make, let's say, $1.5 million a year, one is white, one is black, because of the color of their skin, they are unequal. They may have the same amount of money, they may pay the same amount of taxes, they may live in the same community, but they are still unequal. Why? Because of existential inequality. Because the white person is in a system built by white people, because the black person has to live in that system. They walk down the street and people kind of look out at them from the corner of their eye. The police will stop them because they are driving a nice car, and they can't possibly be driving a nice car. I believe it was Shaquille O'Neal actually had a story where he was stopped in his car. Jamie Foxx was stopped in his car. You know, you're treated differently just because of the color of your skin, and no matter how much you try, you can never close that gap. You're still going to be unequal. Viola Davis, in an interview very recently, talked about how she's won an Emmy, she's won an Oscar, she has won all of these awards, and she still does not get the opportunities to be in certain roles that her white counterparts are. And that is that type of inequality. No matter what position, no matter what hurdles you jump, no matter what hoops you jump through, you're still not equal. You still need to play catch up to these people. And it's because of these reasons. So it's not just about money. So in this section of the book, a little bit of a breakdown of the table on page 53. The roots of vital inequality come from population ecology, status systems, and medical knowledge. Existential come from family, sex, and gender systems, ethno-racial relations, and social status systems. Resources come from economic, political, and cognitive systems, and ecology and performance. Now, he talks about the four mechanisms of inequality. These are social processes, if that's kind of the most accurate term I could use to describe these. These are mechanisms that work within society to perpetuate inequality. So distanciation, exclusion, hierarchization, and exploitation. People will immediately know exploitation. It's a very Marxist idea. People own, there are people that are in positions of power that can benefit off of people below them. So distanciation is the, when we talk about starting from behind, this is where distanciation comes in. Two individuals are born. One is from a poor community, one is from a rich community. The poor child is starting from behind. What we mean by that is because of circumstances beyond their control, the rich kid has more resources at their disposal. They're going to have better nutrition growing up. They're going to be going to better funded schools. They're going to be going to, they're going to have access to after school programming. They're going to have access to all this technology, all these books, all of these. And, you know, because the way that social networks work, their parents, if they are an affluent family, they're obviously connected to other affluent families and business people and people in positions of power, because that's kind of how that system works. So they're going to have all these opportunities and all these opportunities and all this access that the poor child is not going to have. So this distanciation is this creation of social distance. It's this ability or this mechanism in society that perpetuates access and influence and resources in the hands of certain few. The poor child will grow up with malnourished. They'll probably go to a poorer school. They'll live in a more dangerous neighborhood. They'll have run-ins with law enforcement through no actions of their own, really, because they were, because of the circumstances of their birth, they started from behind. So distanciation, the creation of this distance. And then he talks about kind of the idea of winner takes all. Kind of reward structurization and normalization. Kind of the survival of the fittest, winner takes all. Well, when you're already starting from a position where you're more dominant, then you're going to have the resources and you're going to have the ability to take those winnings versus this other person. Exclusion. So this refers to so direct actions, closure, hindering, opportunity hoarding, discrimination, and monopolization. So this, when you're talking about actual agency and people, actual actions of people, you can physically exclude people. These are things like setting requirements to get into certain schools or certain clubs. You have to be from a certain, you have to be able to pay certain fees to get into places. You're going to have to meet certain criteria because of who you are that excludes everybody else. For better or for worse, you know, jobs requiring certain degree qualifications, certain experience qualifications, certain certifications, by virtue of the fact, and many of these are necessary, unfortunately, but not unfortunately, some thankfully, some unfortunately, those exclude people who are unable to get that experience, unable to get that education, unable to get that certification. And it's the kind of the idea of how do I get a job without experience and when there are no entry-level positions left? You know, everyone talks about you need X number of years of experience to get this job. Okay, well, how do I get that experience? You have to get a job. Well, how do I get a job without experience? And the cycle continues and continues and continues. And it comes back to that access idea. So individuals who start out ahead, who have the connections, who have the resources, have the access and the ability, are able to better position themselves and to get around those barriers. So these exclusions, these barriers that are set up to advancement, to closing these gaps, to better jobs, to better access to communities, to better access to resources, ways that people can close that distance, that distanciation, people, the way people can close that distance are blocked off by these barriers that are put up knowingly or unknowingly. So things like membership boundaries, entry thresholds, the accumulation of advantages. So when I was talking before about how you know, the rich kid is gonna go to a better school. They're gonna have connections to better people, you know, to more knowledgeable people. They're gonna be able to pay their way into these programs and these schools and these certification programs, and they're gonna be able to start clawing their way forward. And you're kind of clawing more of these advantages together, and that allows you to bypass these exclusionary barriers and keeps other people out. So that allows you to monopolize resources. Then finally, hierarchization. So this comes down to the superordinate and subordinate positions, having a physical hierarchy, patron-client relationships, and deference, things like organizational ladders, status, authority, ethnic, racial, gendered hierarchies, and generalizations of superiority or inferiority. So creating hierarchies, whether they are explicit or not, allows for this distance to be created. If you think of large corporations where people, I'm still talking in financial terms because it's the easiest to really discuss, but in positions where, you know, I can talk about an implicit hierarchy, actually. In academia, in academic programs, a problem that we're seeing is that there is this gatekeeping that's going on. It's these hierarchies are being created among students and among, you know, graduate students. So certain students are being left out, for better or for worse. There's this hierarchy that's being created where some individuals, based on certain characteristics or certain abilities, certain whatever, are being put in a position of more importance than others, and they are getting more access. They are getting things handed to them. If you've ever applied for a graduate program, the second somebody gets one bit of funding, or you can pit different schools against each other, and then they start to give you more money and give you more access and give you more opportunities to kind of sway you to come in, irrespective of the consequence that you already, based on certain factors, already had advantages that other people did not. You had the money, mom and dad paid your way through university, or you knew the professor personally, or you grew up in a place where you were able to learn these things prior, and you had a better nutrition, and you did not have your growth and your mental development stunted by anything. So you were able to kind of build these, you know, again, pulling everything together. You started with this social distance. You were able to bypass the exclusionary barriers because you're clawing together all of these advantages, and suddenly those advantages allow you to climb this hierarchical ladder, or put you in a subordinate position, a superordinate position to everybody else. And then talking about, you know, ethnic, racial, and gender hierarchies, the valuing of men over women, pushing women into pink professions, so female-dominated professions, nursing, teaching, social work, jobs that don't pay as well as their male counterparts. And even when women pass into non-pink professions, they become doctors or lawyers, there is this tendency to push women towards, you know, being a family doctor, being a GP, being a family lawyer. And that turns this implicit gendered hierarchy, based on cultural values of, you know, what men and women are supposed to be, it solidifies that hierarchy by making it positional, by making it financial, by making it part of an already existing structure. And the same thing with race, you know, the valuing of white individuals because, you know, it's a white dominated area or school or company. The valuing of individuals who are like you versus not like you because of implicit biases that you may have. And then finally, exploitation, so polarized power relations, asymmetric dependence and tributary systems, the extraction, utilization, and abuse. So the extraction of value from individuals, kind of utilizations of using people as tools to better yourself, to exploit their labor for your own. So all of these operate. These mechanisms operate in society in different fields of society to maintain inequality. And, you know, they arise out of inequality, but they also perpetuate inequality. So health differences, if you think of nutrition, we know improper nutrition leads to physical and mental stunting, which impairs your ability to take part in school or do well in school, which puts you behind, which, you know, puts you into special ed classes or, you know, the teacher stops focusing on you and focuses on these other students who are doing much better, giving them more resources and giving them more opportunities while you're falling behind. That creates that social distance. And then once that social distance is created, you don't have access. You are excluded from hierarchy. You're excluded from different opportunities, and that pushes you further out. You can't climb up hierarchies because you don't have access to things that are valuable within those hierarchies. And you're pushed into roles and you're pushed into positions in society where your work and your being can be exploited for whatever reason. So what I'm trying to get at is read Killing Fields of Inequality. I'm running out of time. I got about 2 minutes left, so I really got to start wrapping up. But we have this tendency as a society to look at inequality in purely financial terms, when the financial terms of inequality itself are almost already predetermined by a variety of different factors that are beyond a person's control. Yes, you can always get a better job. Yes, you can always win the lottery and get in and strike it rich. But when you're starting from behind, when that social distance has been created, when you've been excluded from opportunities, when you have been, for your entire life, made into this lower strata of the social hierarchy, you don't have the ability to close that distance, to get those resources that you need to improve yourself with vitality or existentially. You don't have those abilities, so it makes it difficult. So when we're talking about starting from behind the eight ball, we're talking about people, because of who they are, they do not have the access. They do not have the resources. They do not have the things other people have that make them successful. And that's the kind of inequality we're also trying to solve. Money's not going to solve everything. Money is not the be-all, end-all of solving inequality. It's about access. It's about opportunities. It's about allowing it. It's about making sure we have equity, not just equality. And making sure everybody, regardless of who they are, starts from the same place. So thank you very, very much for listening. This has been Let's Talk About. I've been Jason. You've been in the audience. Thank you for listening live on UMFM right now. Next up is some music. If you're listening up on Spotify, thank you very, very much for your downloads. And have a wonderful, wonderful week.